Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-1398 et al. Goya Foods Incorporated, doing business as Goya Foods of Florida, petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Miller for the petitioner, Ms. Fillo for the respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I'm David Miller. I represent Goya Foods. Your Honor, a number of the charges in this case are barred by the statute of limitations. Any charge dealing with assignments to salesmen or delivery drivers, including those charges dealing with assignments that were made to temporary employees, are barred by the statute of limitations. It was only when I read the initial brief for the board to this court that it became clear what the board's factual theory in this case was. Previously, we had struggled to understand how a situation in which numerous charges had been made over the years that were essentially identical, that is to say, the assigning of deliveries and stores to away from what had been alleged as fixed routes or fixed store assignments, could be made over and over and over again in the space of a few years. It appeared to us that what the board was factually alleging was, well, they were initially fixed and then they were changed. And then they were fixed again, and then they were changed again, and fixed again, and changed again, which is a logical impossibility. And it's brief to this court.
That your own brief argued that the installation of the computer program in April 2002 implemented a serious change in the pattern.
The installation of the RoadNet computer in April 2002, was merely a ministerial and operational change that continued the variability that had been in place all along. Goya's position is that all drivers, RoadNet applies only to drivers, not to sales, that all drivers, but also all sales staff, had been varied in their assignments from the beginning. The board had taken the position in the initial case, Goya 1, that perhaps in 1999, perhaps in 1998, those assignments as to both groups had been varied. RoadNet, when it came in, merely continued the variation that had always been in place. In any case, the point of that is that...
At least, I mean, I thought your brief spoke of it really in terms that made it sound like a serious change in the degree of change, and certainly some of the employees testified to what looked like a substantial change in the rate of reassignment.
The RoadNet computer is indeed a very serious change operationally. It maintains the policy of variability.
Wasn't it installed in April 2001 and not in 2002? The blue brief at 6 says it. Beginning in April 2001, Goya began using a software product.
Then I have the year wrong. If the brief says 2001, that is correct. The decision was actually made.
It does say that, but I think all the other references say 02.
It may be that there's some confusion there. In any case, I believe that the majority of the references are correct. The decision to implement RoadNet was taken in 1998 or before, and it was finally brought online in Miami in, I guess, 2002. Interestingly, the board in Goya 3, which is before this court, but which chronologically comes before this case, the board approved the decision to implement RoadNet, but the effect of the remedy ordered in this case and in Goya 1 would be to negate the board's approval of RoadNet potentially because it is we're being ordered to essentially turn the clock back to 1998.
But you have consistent testimony from at least three drivers that their work was changed in April 2002, and we're just looking for substantial record evidence here, right?
Well, the substantial countervailing evidence, it comes from Mr. Unanue, which is in the transcript, that says there was no such change.
You got substantial evidence on both sides. We got sides of the board, right?
And in this appeal, what we are appealing is, number one, the delay. Number two, the lack of a substantial impact as to the assignments alleged in here, a single store, a single driver, no proof of any substantial impact on Mr. Orta, who's the driver in question, no proof of any substantial impact.
I thought on the single assignments, the ones occurring in August or September of 2000 and in October of 2000, and then the use of a non-unit employee in September 2001, your defense was that previously when you had a vacant store, you assigned someone to it. And previously, when you had a new store, you assigned someone to it, right?
The defense is that Goya has always assigned stores, the defense on the merits, so to speak, is that Goya has always assigned stores according to certain criteria that were developed.
When you have a new store, you have to assign someone, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And when you have a vacant store because some driver has left, you have to assign it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
And the board's position and the charging party's position is that that would have to be a bargain on an individual store basis. That's not what the board...
I don't think it's said on an individual store basis at all.
That is asserted, as you say, by the board in its brief. However, if...
Well, no, I didn't say that. I thought the brief said very firmly that the bargaining could take the form of bargaining over a system for assignment.
And again, this is a new feature of the board's appellate brief that has not been featured before. In fact, if you take a look in the transcript of this case at page 28, the administrative law judge in a colloquy with the counsel for the general counsel says, and this is a paraphrase, so whenever a new customer, speaking of stores, comes online, the employer must bargain over who gets that customer, right? And the counsel for the general counsel says, right. So when
the board can't be bound by that
is on page
quite as wacky as that, can it?
Pardon me?
The board cannot be bound by something as wacky as that.
I would hope, said by
the representative of general counsel.
I certainly would hope not. Of course, that's what we've been litigating against, and that's what we have been protesting against.
You're litigating against the order that was issued by the board, not a colloquy between the ALJ and counsel.
And we have attempted to understand the order that was issued by the board as it's informed by...
You can't make unilateral changes, and you can't use prior discretion as a defense with respect to unilateral changes where a union has the right to bargain. It's pretty simple.
Goya's position on that aspect was that it was not prior discretion, that it was a set, fixed, and consistent past practice. However, in this case, we are arguing, we're taking a further position that there are other...
It's past practice that admits of total discretion. The cases are clear on that. It's a nonsense argument. The case is a legion. If the employer has asserted the past practice is we do whatever we want to do, that's not a defense. We smiled at that and moved on. That's old news. And the news is you have to bargain. If your only defense is our past practice is we do whatever we want to do.
And that is not our only defense, Your Honor. We have raised other defenses as well.
That's the defense that you seem to be raising, and it's just not a good defense. And there's substantial evidence otherwise to justify what the board's conclusions are.
In this case, the substantial evidence, there is no substantial evidence, Your Honor, that... For example, and I see I'm into my rebuttal time. May I finish my answer with a full reserve of 2 minutes for the rebuttal? There's a lack of substantial evidence in this case as to the assignments of sales and drivers that anyone or the unit as a whole or any single employee was substantially impacted as explained in the brief. And I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good Good morning. I'm Mackenzie Fellow, and I represent the NLRB. I'm here to ask you to enforce the board's order in this case because it is supported by substantial evidence. Goya is a repeat offender. This is the second of four cases that the board has decided in the last 2 years against Goya. The first case has been enforced by the 11th Circuit, finding that Goya illegally withdrew recognition from the union. It now cannot be argued that they did not have a bargaining obligation in this case. This case is about the unilateral changes Goya made to its employees' working conditions after the illegal withdrawal. Goya fulfilled the threats that it made during the organizing campaign that it would never recognize a union and would not bargain with the union, even if the employees voted to unionize. The changes that they made here were assigning work to sales and delivery employees, assigning unit work.
Can you just tell me how, what the evidence in the record is that where a route was empty or a route was new, a driver was assigned to it? In the past, did the firm always hire a new worker when a route became empty or a route was new?
Well, I'm sure when they got new customers, they did assign them to employees.
So in the case of Navarro in the summer of 2000, what was the change?
Well, once the union comes in, you have to bargain about work assignments. Even if you could assign work prior to unionization at your complete discretion, once the union comes in, you have to bargain over work assignments.
And it has nothing to do with change, is what you're saying.
No, the change
is... It has to do with any bargainable issue.
Well, the change is that it's a change to his work assignment. He didn't used to deliver to that store, and now he does.
So this is a built-in limit on the dynamic status quo?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, you make a claim that there are unilateral changes, and you accept, as I understand it, at, I think page 26 or 27 of your brief, the concept of a dynamic status quo, and you argue explicitly that you have degrees of conduct, of flexibility, and you appear to object to a change in the degree asserted by the employer.
But then on
three issues, you don't even talk about change at all.
Well, the change is to his workload. I mean, the driver didn't used to deliver to that store. It added hours to his day. It changed his pay. It changed his work, what he had to do. And that is what you have to bargain over. My understanding of the dynamic status quo is that generally the company used to do something where it had no discretion. If every year before unionization, they gave employees a 4% pay increase, after unionization, they have to keep giving the 4% pay raise because there's no discretion.
I understand that. So the dynamic status quo doesn't apply at all to issues where the pattern has been one of discretion? So I don't think you told us that in your brief.
That's my understanding, yes, that the dynamic status quo does not apply in this case. And even if it did, there is no evidence in the record about what this so-called dynamic status quo was prior to unionization.
There's no evidence that before the assignment of Navarro to the new store, new stores were handled by some kind of magic, right?
Correct.
You don't even try to argue that that was any different from what went on before.
Right. The changes to the driver's work assignment, to his hours, to his pay. Those are the basic things that you have to bargain over once your employees vote for unionization.
So why do you talk about change at all? I'm not sure I'm getting you.
Your change is with respect to the individual employee's assignment. That's what you're talking
right.
about.
That's correct.
It's not that the employer can't fill if a new store comes in. Someone's got to work it, but what you're saying is the individual employee's previous assignment was altered.
Right.
Which was not bargained over.
Right. And of course someone has to deliver to the stores. And like you said, we don't care what the outcome is of the bargaining. They just have to bargain. They can come up. I mean, this is not the first delivery company that to become unionized.
I'm sure.
If it were, then the act would have been repealed in 1936. If it were some huge problem for delivery companies to become unionized. But that's not the case. Other companies have done it. It's the most basic of bargainable issues, that you have to bargain over work assignments, over pay, over hours, over schedules. These are very basic things that other companies have bargained over for years and years without commerce coming to a stop. The other changes that the company made were to the warehouse night shift schedule. They required their night shift warehouse workers to come in 30 minutes earlier. And it's completely inconsistent.
I'm just curious. I'm going to go back to RoadNet for a minute. I'm curious. Once RoadNet was established, is there evidence in the record that the changes that were made in the driving assignments after April 2002 were different than what the assignments would have been following the RoadNet program?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
My understanding is that they started using RoadNet in 2001, actually,
right.
For some purposes, and then expanded the use in 2002. So that's why there's two different dates referenced in the brief.
But wouldn't if there were foul play in the changes in the driving assignment in April 2002, wouldn't one expect that there would be a difference between the assignments that are made under the foul play scenario and the assignments that are made under RoadNet? If RoadNet's just a computer program that's looking for greatest efficiency, and the assignments that are made after April 2002 have some nefarious anti-union purpose in mind, wouldn't you expect a discrepancy between the two?
We're not claiming that they had anti-union animus in assigning work assignments. We're saying that they didn't bargain over it. They could have had the best of intentions, but it's still illegal if they don't bargain over it.
But were the assignments different than what RoadNet would have provided or did provide?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
On page 28 of your brief, you say the board thus properly credited the testimony of drivers over Unanu's claim that the drivers' routes were changed regularly. That seems to presuppose a notion that a pattern of regular change before would be a defense.
Well, there are cases where routine changes prior to unionization can constitute a dynamic status quo, but they have to be very, very regular changes. Like, I think the company cited one case where an employee was changed from being assigned to 5 machines or 6 machines, and the board found that that did not violate the act because it was done so regularly. Within 1 month, he worked 5 machines and then 6 machines and then 5 machines and then 6 machines over and over and over again. Or another one where someone their schedule was changed 6 times in 1 year. Those are become so routine that sometimes those can be a defense to a change. However, here, the employees testified repeatedly that they worked the same routes for 4 years, for 4.5 years, for 5 years, for 6 years. There's no way that the company can claim that there was a routine change to drivers' schedules prior to unionization. They all testified that they worked the same routes.
So regularity doesn't encompass an absolutely uniform response to a comparatively rare event, such as a new store. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Are there cases? Sounds from Judge Edwards as if there are cases saying that. But.
Well, it depends on which way you're looking at it. A new store has nothing to do with whether the employee who is in an old route historically stayed in that old route. As I understand your argument, the claim here is that that employee was in a route, and employees typically stayed in routes unless they agreed otherwise. That was their preference, that was honored and protected, and they had advantages both in terms of hours and money. And so it had nothing to do with whether there's a new route that has to be filled.
Right.
And all you're saying is it's bargainable. That's all. That's
right.
The only thing this is about.
Yes, we don't care what they agree to in the end.
It just has to be negotiated.
Yes, they just have to bargain. That is the foul play that occurred here. If my time is running out, if there are no other questions, we ask you to enforce the order in full, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'll just hit a couple of things that came up during the argument. The board likes to adduce the history that it's set forth in these various charges. If we were in a trial court, I'd say it was improper character evidence. It really has little to do with the, frankly, limited charges that we're here on today. It is the board's burden to show that the changes, whether they were bargained or not, have a substantial impact on an employee, the unit, some employees. This record does not show any proof of that. The board shows impact by inferring it, by presuming it. Well, the store...
How would you show it?
I'm sorry?
How would you show it?
You would show it by showing that the particular employee involved had an increase or a decrease in his work, or I see my time is out. May I?
Go ahead, answer the question.
You would show it by showing that the particular employee, let's talk about Hector Mora, the salesman, actually made more or less, or actually worked more hours or fewer hours, or actually did something that had some kind of an impact on him. And certainly as to Hector Mora, there is nothing of that. The only proof in this record, or supposed proof, is that the store he was assigned ordered goods. Nothing more than that. As to the driver, Orta, who's the only one who's discussed individually, the only proof is that his route was changed. And he heard through the grapevine that some other drivers drove his route. He said, well, it takes me longer or it does not, but it's a thin
route. It says it takes me longer. That's a change, right? That's an impact.
That would be a change, and we're saying it's not a substantial change because, keying back to the prior argument, it is Goya's position that this change was going on all along in any case, that there was no case, so there are interlocking arguments. But the bottom line here is that the board did not carry its burden of proving. Thank you very much, Your Honor. We would ask that the court not enforce the order.
Case is submitted.